It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Well, hello, folks. It's your old buddy, Luke Clayton. You know what? It's time for our 15-minute outdoor show. Now, this show is made possible by the Dallas Safari Club. BigGame.org, that's the website for the Dallas Safari Club. The convention will be, as always, in Dallas, January the 3rd through the 6th this coming year. You know, we have a special guest with us today, folks. Mr. Gordon Whittington, who is the editor of North American Whitetail Magazine and also the North American Whitetail TV show, the producer and co-host. So guess what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about deer hunting. Gordon, thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure, Luke. I'm happy to be here, and I hope everybody had a great holiday.
Well, I tell you what, I did for sure, and I thought maybe we'd talk about definitely deer hunting and deer in general, but a topic that I'll admit tricks me up a lot and is aging deer. And I get to hunt with some people that are, you know, way knowledgeable on deer, that know a lot more about deer hunting and deer aging than I. But, you know, I really have serious doubts if every time if someone says, now, we want to shoot only 5.5-year-old deer. Now, you're out in a green field or a food plot or something, you see several bucks out there. That one is definitely 4.5. That one is most definitely a 5.5. You know, I've got to have reservations about that, Gordon. I wonder, from a professional's standpoint yourself, do you think it's always possible to know the age of a deer just by looking at him at 100 yards away?
Let's face it, when you open his mouth, if he were to walk up to your stand and say, ah, and you could look in his mouth with a flashlight and look at the tooth wear and everything else, even then you wouldn't be absolutely positive the difference between a 4.5 and a 5.5, and especially not between a 6.5 and a 9.5. I mean, there are all these many variables involved, Luke, and all we're trying to do realistically as deer managers, in my opinion, and I say this from 50 years in the deer woods, honestly, I just don't want to shoot the clearly wrong deer. I don't want to mistake a great up-and-coming 3.5-year-old for a so-so 6.5-year-old. I mean, I would like to let that younger deer show what he's got. So when in doubt, I'm going to hold off the trigger, but I'm not going to try to fine-tune it to the point where I say, oh, that's definitely 5.5, and that one's definitely 6.5. There's so many factors of body condition, dominance, food sources, in terms of health of the animals. There's so many factors involved, not to mention the individual difference between animals, just like there is between people. And you try to get too cute with that, and sooner or later you're going to be wrong.
I agree with you 100%, Gordon. And the tooth, the charts, the models of the tooth wear, that's a generalized idea, I'm sure, because I've been told that the only really, really accurate way to do it is a cross section of a tooth. Is that right?
Well, the incisor, it's a technique called cementum annuli, which is basically you're almost taking an incisor, one of the front teeth on a deer in the very front of the mouth. Obviously, they don't have them on top, only on the bottom. So you take one of them. It's cross sectioned in a laboratory. It's bleached and stained to the point where the annual growth rings within the tooth show up. And the right person, there's certainly some guys in Texas that can do this, the right person should be able to tell you how many years old the deer is based on those rings. But I will say this, it's easier on northern deer just because you have more distinct seasons between the growing season and the winter than it is in the south, and particularly in South Texas or Florida, where it's almost no winter to speak of, and the deer basically have almost a year-round growing season. So even there, it's subject to interpretation, although I would say in general it's probably a little bit more accurate.
Good information, Gordon. Folks, our guest is Gordon Whittington, who is the editor of North American Whitetail Magazine. Gordon knows a lot about deer, and you know, 50 years of hunting them, you're gonna learn a lot just being out there watching them, other than just the scholastic studies on them, won't you? Just being there and seeing what they do at different times of the rut. That's one way that the average deer hunter can learn a lot, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And I think what I have learned in 50 years in the deer woods is that I don't know very much.
I know that's true with me, Gordon. But well, let's think about the rut. Let's talk about that. We all know we want to shoot an old, mature deer. And I think if you've hunted deer much, it's easy to tell the difference. Even I can always do this. I can usually, 2.5-year-old deer, don't shoot him. If he gets a little bit older, that's when I start drawing the bowstring. But there's just so many factors of hunting late season deer. And up in Northeast and North Texas right now, Gordon, the primary rut is done because I've spent a lot of time the last few days hunting. I'm not seeing those bucks with their head to the ground trailing. I'm not seeing nervous doe. Actually, I'm not seeing a lot of bucks right now like I did a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So after the rut, the primary rut is done, deer hunting is not over, but there's some new tactics that have to be employed, right?
Well, absolutely. Let's face it, you could have the occasional sporadic and, frankly, virtually unpredictable, quote, second rut in an area, particularly where you have a very short, intense rut, where you have a very balanced buck-doe ratio, and all the bucks breed, you know, pretty much every doe comes into heat within a week or two-week period. They all get bred. There are plenty of bucks around. They all get bred, and then you have very little second rut, unless you might have the occasional doe fawn, particularly a big early-born doe fawn that does come into heat for the first time, maybe in December, even January. Then sometimes you'll get this little flurry, but that is so sporadic and unpredictable, it literally is a deer-by-deer situation. And sometimes you'll see it, sometimes you won't. When you do see it, there may be a half dozen bucks on this one doe fawn just chasing her all over, and she's freaking out. So that's an awesome situation for a hunter, obviously, but it happens once in a blue moon. So I tend to prefer to just let the deer settle down a little bit. Hopefully on my property, I've not pounded them as much as my neighbors have, and the deer have now started to look to my property as a relatively safe place to be. If that's the case, then I hopefully can slip in there with some really subtle and sneaky tactics and try to get into position to catch some deer on a feeding pattern. And that's probably how you're going to shoot one this time of year.
And also in this area of the state, Gordon, you know, food plots, some of us call them green fields, but green fields is a big draw for deer. And seems like I probably myself, especially when rifle hunting years back, saw and shot a lot of deer off of the food plot. So that's what a food plot is designed for, really, is this time of the year. And I've always liked to pattern deer going into and out of them. And very often they'll have distinct trails that they use, won't they, coming into these areas?
Absolutely. Now, we all know that if deer did exactly the same thing 2, 3, 5 days in a row, there wouldn't be any bucks left because people would see them in one place, go sit there the next day and kill them when they walk back down the same trail. We all know it's not quite that simple a pattern to figure out. But under similar wind conditions, weather conditions, hopefully, you know, maybe using trail cameras to try to figure this out. But once you can figure out that there's a line of travel that a mature buck is following, you won't necessarily kill him on that green field even during the rut. You might kill him back literally 200, 300, 500 yards back on that trail or back toward the bedding area where he's more likely to be on his feet in daytime, particularly during the post-rut when he's worn out and tired of being hounded by hunters. He's still got to feed. He's still got to drink water. He's, you know, and obviously he's got to rest. But he doesn't have to do a lot of that in daytime, at least not out in the open. So I'm going to try to crowd as close as I can to the bedding spot if I know where it is. But I really don't want to get so aggressive that I bump him back across the fence to the neighbor, because that's not going to help me.
There's a fine line there, too. I know that, Gordon. As a bow hunter, what I like to do is try to, there's always, say, deer coming into food plots. As a rule, there's no hard and fast rules, I understand that, but as a general rule, there'll be little staging areas. They like to come in at late in the evening, but you know, they'll, like you said, back in the brush, if you will. But if you're a bow hunter and you can get in there and not disturb them and set up, during midday or whatever, set your stand in there. Those type areas, I've had good success with that, Gordon, bow hunting. Of course, if you're shooting a rifle, well, you just, you know, try to get downwind at a good vantage point, I guess, and just spend your time and wait on them, you know?
Well, even with the rifle, Luke, I think we, you know, and certainly I hunt rifle, muzzleloader, crossbow, bow, you know, you name it. I mean, we hunt with some of all of it in different places at different times, and even there, I think the average gun hunter would benefit greatly, even if he doesn't consider himself a serious bow hunter. I think more and more application of bow hunting strategy and tactics and principles to gun hunting would help a lot of guys who are not serious, bow hunters, but they tend to rely on the crutch of the gun's extended range. But you still have to get to where a big deer is in daylight to kill him. I don't care what the range is. So, you know, if guys would be a little bit more focused, I think, in their approach sometime in gun season and not just rely on the extended range of the weapon, I think they would get back into some of those better spots, maybe with less visibility and shorter range, but when the deer comes by, they got a good chance to get him shot.
You bet. You know, Gordon, something too is you and I grew up in basically the same era, and back in the day, 70s and the 60s, and even into the 80s, the number of Boone and Crockett, let's just think about Texas, and I can't quote numbers, but I bet you probably could. But, you know, the number of Boone and Crockett scoring bucks back in the 70s, I mean, you could count them on both hands, couldn't you? They were rare. But now, even, I'm not talking about just high fence properties, but, you know, some well-managed free-ranging properties, there's lots and lots of deer, Boone and Crockett deer, harvested each year.
Well, absolutely. East Texas has really come on. The Trinity River Valley and the Neches and the Angelina, all in the Sabine, all these different drainages in East Texas, the genetics are there. And so they produce the occasional huge deer. Despite the amount of hunting pressure, despite the difficulty of the habitat to hunt, more and more people are being, you know, are not going out and literally shooting every forkhorn they see. People are much more, less worried about filling a buck tag. And of course, antler restrictions and things have come on certainly in countywide basis in parts of Texas and elsewhere, and they have made a difference. But, you know, the very biggest top end in Texas historically was, you know, way back in the day. I mean, if you look at McCulloch County in north central Texas producing the old Brady Buck world record in the 1890s, non-typical, over 280 inches. You had the Mudge Buck that was found dead in a fence in 1925, I believe, out near Junction, Texas, out in west central Texas. Some of those super, super big deer, some of the big typicals were killed early in the 20th century in south Texas. So people tend to kind of think, oh, gee, you know, you can't kill those super monsters anymore. But you look around at, just look at the record book, look at Texas Trophy Hunter magazine, look at anywhere, and you'll realize there's a ton of big deer out there these days. And really, it's probably as good as it's ever been.
No doubt. And a look at the record books will prove it. And gosh, I do remember when, you could hunt, and I've done it a couple of years and never see a 130 class buck, you know, but on decently managed property, deer like that, which in my opinion is a big old deer, a 130 can be an impressive buck, but the chance to harvest that kind of deer now, I think there's never been a better time, Gordon. You know what, they're telling me that we have just about ran our course for today's show, but I really do appreciate you being with us, and I wonder, can we get you back sometime and talk some more deer hunting?
I'll be happy to. There's plenty to say about white-tailed deer, and, you know, it's fun to visit about it. It's a great topic, and it's something obviously more than 10 million people out there participate in, so let's talk whenever you get a chance.
We will, and thanks again, Gordon. Folks, that was Mr. Gordon Whittington, the editor for North American Whitetail Magazine and the producer and co-host of North American Whitetail TV. We are out of time. I want to remind you that this show is underwritten by the Dallas Safari Club. I want to tell you the website is biggame.org. The convention this year is in Dallas, January the 3rd. Through the 6th. Now, do remember, you can go to ketr.org and you can listen to the archive of this show for months to come. Till this time next week, be safe in the outdoors.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.